VOA 1, The Hits. Cheers.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr., John Russell, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
This Monday is Columbus Day in the United States. The celebration of the holiday, observed on the second Monday of October, is now somewhat different from ones in the past. The U.S. government established Columbus Day as a national holiday in 1934 to honor the explorer Christopher Columbus. The day recognizes Columbus's arrival in the Americas in October 1492. Over more than 100 years, statues and memorials to Columbus have been put up in American cities as a popular historical person. But this year, many statues of Columbus have been attacked or are being removed. In May, the death of George Floyd, a black man in Minneapolis, Minnesota, incited nationwide protests against police use of force and racial injustice. Protesters directed their anger at statues and monuments honoring Confederate officials from the American Civil War. They associated them with racial injustice, racism, and slavery. The anger led to attacks on memorials to Columbus around the country. Statues of the explorer were taken down in Boston, Chicago, and many other cities. The city of Columbus, Ohio, also reportedly removed his statue and placed it in safekeeping. The explorer, who is believed to have been born in Genoa in modern-day Italy, arrived in the Americas more than 525 years ago. He claimed most of the territory for the Kingdom of Spain, which supported his expeditions. The first reported celebrations of Christopher Columbus's arrival in America took place in the United States in 1792. The celebration was meant to mark the 300th anniversary of Columbus's arrival. Later, Italian Americans began celebrating the explorer as part of their cultural history. The Catholic charitable group, the Knights of Columbus, has long defended the legacy of Columbus. The group was founded by Irish Catholic immigrants to the U.S. After years of growing support, President Franklin D. Roosevelt declared Columbus Day a national holiday in 1934. Since 1971, Columbus Day has been observed on the second Monday of October. Critics say that Columbus did not discover America, since native people already lived there. His explorations helped open the way for a huge migration of Europeans to what they called the New World. This, they say, brought war, disease, and death to many native peoples. For years, Native American groups have opposed honoring Columbus. And some U.S. cities and states have moved away from honoring Columbus and instead observing a day for Native American people. Wisconsin was among the states to declare the second Monday in October Indigenous Peoples Day. The state has recognized 11 Indian tribes within its borders. The District of Columbia declared its October holiday Indigenous Peoples Day for the year 2019. But it returns to Columbus Day this year. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
In the northeastern United States, some Americans are debating what to do about an animal that almost died off, the gray seal. The gray seal population has grown so much in recent years that critics are calling for a reduction in numbers. Nick Muto has fished the Atlantic Ocean up and down the New England coast. Nothing makes him angrier than the sight of a seal. Muto is among a growing group of fishermen, beachgoers, and local officials who are quick to blame many problems on the growing seal population. "The fish have been driven out of there by seals," Muto said about traditional fishing areas. The debate over seals became stronger after the death in July of a swimmer. The swimmer was killed by a great white shark near Harpswell, Maine. Seals are often eaten by sharks, and some experts believe Julie Dimperio Hollowack may have been mistaken for a seal. There could be as many as 50,000 gray seals in New England waters. The animals were once rare because of aggressive hunting. But experts believe there is not enough science to make an effective decision about whether the current population is too large. They say there is little reason for culling or killing the animals. Experts also say there is a lack of clear evidence that seals are destroying fisheries or are totally to blame for shark attacks. Warming waters and other issues could also play a part. The Gulf of Maine, which goes from Cape Cod to Nova Scotia, Canada, has been heating up faster than most of the world's oceans. David Johnston of Duke University has done estimates of the gray seal population. "We get into this question of how many gray seals there are. The next question is how many seals should there be, which is kind of where people are going to go next with that, which is a very challenging thing," Johnston told the Associated Press. The debate over gray seal numbers has led the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to present ideas for how to deal with the population. The ideas include using physical barriers to keep seals away from fishing equipment. I'm John Russell.
Tasmanian devils have been returned to the Australian mainland 3,000 years after the animals died off there. The mainland population is believed to have been partly killed off by a group of dingoes, wild dogs native to the continent. Experts say other causes of extinction could include a rise in the native human population and extremely dry weather. Tasmanian devils are meat-eating marsupials. Marsupials are mammals that reproduce differently from other animals. Most are born when they are just embryos and still developing. The baby animals take shelter for several months in a pouch on their mother's body as they develop and grow. Two of Australia's most common mammals, the kangaroo and the koala, are marsupials. Tasmanian devils are generally black or brown in color and can weigh up to 8 kilograms. Experts say while devils are not dangerous to people or farm animals, they will defend themselves if attacked and can cause serious injury. An estimated 20,000 wild devils live on the island of Tasmania, which is an Australian state. But the animals have not lived on the mainland for about 3,000 years. There used to be a lot more devils in Tasmania, with wildlife experts estimating the population to be as large as 140,000 at one time. But a deadly disease struck the devils in the 1990s, reducing their number to as few as 20,000. The drop in numbers led to Australian efforts to protect the devils. Wildlife activists have worked for years to strengthen the population. They argue that devils are needed in the environment because they can keep more destructive creatures like foxes and wild cats under control. They say this, in turn, helps protect the environment as a whole. Conservation groups recently announced that 11 of the animals were released on the Australian mainland last month. Another release happened in July. It marked the first time the marsupials have been released into a protected wild environment on the mainland. The 11 most recently released devils began exploring their new home once they were let go at a large wildlife refuge in New South Wales state. Tim Faulkner is president of a conservation group called Aussie Ark. He said the historic releases were the first steps in a project much like the move to return wolves to Yellowstone National Park in the United States in the 1990s. Faulkner said it was incredible and surreal to have reached the goal after 16 years of work. The efforts included establishing the largest Tasmanian devil mating program on the mainland. Aussie Ark and other groups plan to release 20 more devils next year and another 20 the following year. Faulkner said conservationists hope the project will create an insurance population against the disease that crushed Tasmania's devil population. The disease, which causes cancerous tumors on the animal's face, has so far proved to be untreatable. Some experts question whether the project will have the full desired effect on the environment. Nick Mooney is a conservationist who has worked with Tasmanian devils for about 40 years. He told the Associated Press that wild cats are likely to return to hunting for food with increased competition from the devils. There is an argument that by putting devils into a situation where you stop other meat-eaters scavenging is that those animals, like cats and foxes, will simply start hunting. You could actually make a conservation problem where it didn't exist before, Mooney said. The devils released this year and others in coming years will not be going into the wild just yet. Some devils will be connected to devices that report their movements. Animal experts will be watching to learn how these creatures adapt to their new environment. I'm Brian Lynn.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. The United States faced a deep national crisis in 1850. That crisis threatened to split the nation in two. It began over the issue of slavery in the new territories of California and New Mexico. Many Northerners wanted to ban slavery in the new territories, but Southern states believed the federal government did not have the right to decide where slavery could or could not go. President Zachary Taylor had no clear policy on the issue. He attempted to be neutral. He hoped the problem would solve itself, but he did not get his wish. In fact, the split between North and South grew wider. Many Southerners said the South should declare its independence from the rest of the country. Then, Senator Henry Clay of Kentucky stepped forward with a plan to save the Union. Clay had left the Senate in 1842, but returned in 1849. He was surprised to find how bitter the North and South had grown toward each other in his 7 years out of the Senate. Clay urged his friends in the border states, those between the northern and southern states, to work to build public support for the Union. He believed their support would help prevent the South from seceding. Clay also began to think about a compromise that might settle the differences between the two sections of the country. He once said, "I go for honorable compromise whenever it can be made. Life itself is but a compromise between death and life. The struggle continues through our whole existence until the great destroyer finally wins. All legislation, all government, all society is formed upon the principle of mutual concession, politeness, and courtesy. Upon these, everything is based." Clay was sure that a compromise between North and South was possible. Near the end of January in 1850, Clay completed work on his plan. Most parts of it already had been proposed as separate bills. Clay put them together in a way that both sides could accept. Clay proposed to the Senate that California join the Union as a slave-free state. He said, "Territorial governments should be formed in other parts of the Western territories, with no immediate decision on whether slavery would be permitted." Clay proposed the western border of Texas be changed to give New Mexico most of the land disputed by them. In exchange, he said, the national government should agree to pay the public debts that Texas had when it became a state. He proposed that no more slaves be sold in the District of Columbia for use outside the federal district. But he also said that slavery should not be ended in the district unless its citizens and those of Maryland approved. Clay said a better law was needed for the return of fugitive slaves to their owners. And he proposed that Congress declare it had no power to interfere with the slave trade between states. Senator Clay believed these 8 steps would satisfy the interests of both the North and the South. Senator Jefferson Davis of Mississippi declared that Clay's compromises did not offer anything of value to the South. He said the Southern states would accept nothing less than extending the Missouri Compromise line west to the Pacific Ocean. Extending the line meant that land to the South would be open to slavery. Clay answered that no power on earth could force him to vote to establish slavery where it did not exist. He said Americans had blamed Britain for forcing African slavery on the colonists. He said he would not have the future citizens of California and New Mexico blaming Henry Clay for slavery there. Clay said he did not want to debate, but wished that the senators would think carefully about his proposals. He said he hoped they would decide on them only after careful study. He asked them to see the proposals as a system of compromise, not as separate bills. Clay expected extremists on both sides to denounce the compromise, but he believed the more reasonable leaders of the North and South would accept it. 1 week after Clay first proposed the compromise, he rose in the Senate to speak in its defense. The Senate hall was crowded. People had come from as far away as Boston and New York to hear Clay speak. Some senators said there had not been such a crowd in the Capitol building since the day Clay said goodbye to the Senate 8 years earlier. Clay had to rest several times as he climbed the steps of the Capitol. He told a friend that he felt very tired and weak. His friend advised Clay to rest and make his speech later. "No," Clay said, "my country is in danger. If I can be the one to save it from that danger, then my health and life are not important." Senator Clay began his speech by talking of the serious crisis that faced the nation. He said that never before had he spoken to a group as troubled and worried as the one he spoke to now. Clay listed his 8 resolutions. Then he said, "No man on earth is more ready than I am to surrender anything which I have proposed and to accept in its place anything that is better. But I ask the honorable senators whether their duty will be done by simply limiting themselves to opposing any one or all of the resolutions I have offered. If my plan of peace and unity is not right, give us your plan. Let us see how all the questions that have arisen out of this unhappy subject of slavery can be better settled more fairly and justly than the plan I have offered. Present me with such a plan, and I will praise it with pleasure and accept it without the slightest feeling of regret." Clay said the major differences separating the country could be settled by facing facts. He said the first great fact was that laws were not necessary to keep slavery out of California and New Mexico. He said the people of California already had approved an anti-slavery state constitution. And he said the nature of land in New Mexico was such that slaves could not be used. Clay said there was justice in the borders he proposed for Texas. It would still be a very large state after losing the area it and New Mexico each claimed. And he said it was right for the United States to pay the debts of Texas because that state no longer could collect taxes on trade as an independent country. Clay said there was equal justice in his resolutions ending the slave trade in the District of Columbia and strengthening laws on the return of runaway slaves. He said the South, perhaps, would be helped more than the North by his proposals, but the North, he said, was richer and had more money and power. To the North, slavery was a matter of feeling. But to the South, Clay said, it was a hard social and economic fact. He said the North could look on in safety while the actions of some of its people were producing flames of bitterness throughout the southern states. Then Clay attacked the South's claim that it had the right to leave the Union. He said the Union of States was permanent, that the men who built the country did not do so only for themselves, but for all future Americans. Clay warned that if the South seceded, there would be war within 60 days. He said the slaves of the South would escape by the thousands to freedom in the North. Their owners would follow them and try to return them to slavery by force. These events, he said, would lead to war between the slaveholding and free states. He said this would not be a war of only 2 or 3 years. History had shown, he said, that such wars lasted many years and often destroyed both sides. Even if the South could secede without war, he said, it still would not get any of the things it demanded. Secession would not open the territories to slavery. It would not continue the slave trade in the District of Columbia. And it would not lead to the return of slaves who escaped to the North. So, said Clay, the South would not help itself by leaving the Union. His 2-day speech gave new hope to many that the Union could be saved. But extremists on both sides opposed his plan.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.